Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and I have with me today the best friends of the Big Three, I'm going to call you, Jessica Baker and Mark Rader. How you going, guys?
Yeah, good.
We're besties.
Such good friends.
Wow, friends of the podcast. I'm going to add that to my CV.
You should.
I'm also a friend of the podcast.
Well, do you know what? I believe it. I say it because it's true. Because for those of you listening at home, we've actually been sitting in the podcast studio for about half an hour, just shooting the breeze, just talking about everything except the Big Three podcast.
I think that's called procrastinating. Oh, okay. I would say.
Oh, I'm going to call it friendship.
Yeah, yeah. Can we both?
Yeah, can it be? It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It's a combination of the two. Listen, guys, big things happening this week. Next Monday, 13th mm-hmm. of September, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. day that we get a sigh of relief, a slight lifting of restrictions. Those who are
very
double vaxxed. Very slight, but you know, we'll take it
because
we're needy and it just something needs to change.
For those of you listening and wondering what the mysterious easing of restrictions are, it is
we can have a picnic with maximum five
fully vaxxed. Yep. Adults.
Yep. And not, you can't have a picnic in your front yard or in your backyard.
Which
it should be a park or a beach or whatever it might be. But yes, there's a kind of a slight increase. Mm. Now, Matt, you're not going to be fully vaccinated by the 13th.
Oh, thank you for that. No.
I suggest you're ready for our picnic.
Yeah, let's go. Big Three picnic.
We'll do it on the park across from Matt's house.
Oh, gosh.
So we're going to wave at him as he stares longingly through the window.
I love that so much, Mark. I am on board.
Oh, my gosh. I just had a flash of like that opening scene of Bridget Jones' Diary where she's like singing All By Myself and don't some dogs come and eat her because she's something like that. That'll be me. I'm Bridget Jones. No, yes, listen, my second dose is 3 days after D-Day. So,
All right, so you're not far behind.
I'm not far behind. Mm-hmm, and in fact, the day that I get my second vax is my day off. I'm free to have a picnic for those available.
Well.
Those
look,
available.
I've already got four picnics booked in on the 13th. Does it count if you're with five different people, five
just
different times?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. I'm G'd up. I'm ready.
Do either of you guys know, because I heard that kids are included in the five. Mm. Is this truth?
I heard they weren't.
Oh, but
don't take my opinion.
I need to look
fact.
Into it. I'll go on to the
that really
the
limits.
Well, because we're a family of five.
Yeah, that's just
I've got three kids, so it's just like I just get to have a picnic with the same people I've been spending the last 10 weeks with.
Yeah, that's
which
rough.
Is fine.
Which is fine. I love my family, but
I just need a little more.
I need to see someone else. Anyway, super exciting.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
It is exciting. I just hope the Sutherland Shire can hold out and not become a high-risk LGA.
Oh,
and then we lose our picnic privileges. I couldn't even get the words out. It's too painful. And then we would just turn into, you know, an hour of exercise outside, which we've all been doing anyway.
Exercise?
Yeah.
Have we been doing that?
That's what the high-risk LGAs get.
Oh.
On the 13th.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sutherland Shire, you know.
So
keep
follow
it real.
The
keep
rules.
Keep it real.
Well, don't give in now. We're so close.
We're so close. Are we? I don't know. I don't know if we are, but let's say it because that makes
I mean,
us feel
the
better.
Sutherland Shire is 80% first dose vaxxed.
Stop it this instant.
That's pretty good, guys. Mm. That's pretty good.
That is exciting.
Well done. You get
well
a
done.
Clap.
You get a laugh. There you go.
Yeah. Very
well, good. Enough about that. For those of you who have been listening in at home and tuning into our online services, we've been going through a series called The Topography of Discipleship, Finding Our Way as the Church Today, looking at five different relational contexts which each contribute to the deepening of our discipleship. And this last week, we continued to look at the social context, you and a team, building community, being able to practice, and being a part of mission. And Roxanne Lawler, our associate pastor, preached on Sunday, and you can listen to that message again from our morning service through our regular GBC sermon podcast. But as has been our routine in the PM service, we have Formation Sunday, a night where we come into discussion and dive deeper into the context in which we're looking at. And so the Big Three today is going to continue that discussion with a fourth question. But before we get into that, Mark, Jess, I'm interested on your thoughts coming out of Roxy's message on Sunday.
Jess?
Yeah, okay, I'll go first. Very good. I'm a sucker for a punchline. So loved when she wrapped up at the end. Remind me if I get this wrong. The social context is big enough to dare, small enough to care.
Yes.
Very good. Yes. Nailed it. Nailed
it. It was a classic bumper sticker.
It was good. It was a good time. I just thought, you know, that's a really nice little vibe for a social context. I like it. I'm going to give things a go because they've forced me to. They've dared me to. But they care enough to foster and make sure I don't fall on my butt.
Yeah.
So... I like that.
it's those little tidbits that really keep me going. No, I dig that. That struck me as well. The whole like dare to step out of your comfort zone, dare to practice, dare to try something new. But the cool thing about the social context is that although it's like, you know, up to 70 people, which sounds like a lot, it's big enough that you're still known and so you can be cared for, you can be supported, you can experience community in that space. Yeah, I loved it. I love a good bumper sticker slogan.
I could even get that as a tattoo, really. Oh,
hey, there we go. And on next week's podcast.
The views of Jessica Baker are not the views of...
How about you, Mark? What's it out for you?
I think, I think the social context, as we've said a couple of times over the last couple of weeks, is an area that as a church community, I don't think we've done particularly well.
Mm.
And in the book that these relational contexts come from, Discipleship That Fits.
Alex and Bobby, I believe.
Yeah, right. That's right. Bobby Harrington and Alex Absalom.
Lex Man and the B Man.
Yep.
Bless him.
Took us 8 weeks, but we've learned the names of the authors.
They observe that it's often the missing context in church life. And that really resonated with me. But I was struck by the fact that, you know, Rox was able to kind of pull together quite a few pretty reasonable examples of where the social context does exist in our life together. And so that was kind of encouraging. Like, oh, okay.
Maybe we're not so bad.
it's not completely absent, you know, and I think, you know, some of her examples of what it looks like here, even though they tended to be kind of event-based, kind of one-offs rather than a consistent thing. Oh, that really kind of painted a bit of a picture of what the social context holds in terms of promise for us, you know, intergenerational activity and, you know, everyone kind of adding what they can to the mix and, you know, everyone finding their place in the mission of God kind of stuff. So I was like, I found that kind of encouraging in the midst of all that. Yeah.
Awesome. Great stuff. Well, I think it's just time for us to get into the big three. So let's get into it. Well, as has been kind of our rhythm with these kind of 2 weeks in the same context, we spend the big three kind of in the second week asking the same question, which is a really practical one, and we're going to continue to ask it today. How can we start to explore and experience the social context in our everyday, particularly during lockdown?
Mm.
Mark, what do you reckon?
I think there's a few things we can do. I think one of them is to see and understand the impact that the social context could have. So, like as I just said, you know, like the example that Rox used of Winterfest, which is was because we haven't run it for 2 years due to lockdown.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. But it was a week long kids program during the winter school holidays.
Mm.
And it ran, I think, you know, 2 or 3 days, depending on the year and the team and those sorts of things, you know, kind of a morning to lunch kind, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, her description of that, of having, you know, some junior leaders, you know, kids who were 14 and 15, all the way through to people who were like in their 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
And kind of everyone in between, all kind of finding their place within it. People who were kind of really core in our congregation, people who were kind of not fringy per se, but relatively new and still kind of getting to know people. They were involved.
Mm.
Different people contributed in different ways, some, you know, contributing, you know, financially or contributing, you know, resources, you know, building stuff for it, but not being there on the day, leader, like all the way through. And there's just something really quite wonderful about that. And I think one of the questions that's worth like even us just kind of batting around a little bit is what would our community of faith look like if the social context was firing? Like what if we had not just, I mean, it's not that Winterfest is the only space for the social context. But what if we had dozens of social context discipleship groups where people had the opportunity to mix with other, like, kind of other generations and others of, you know, varying degrees of relational knowledge of the church and different levels of giftedness. Like, what would it look like if we had a community of faith that really had that working? You know, like, so I don't know what you guys think. I mean, I know you both have worked in and are working in youth ministry, which is probably not quite the same.
It's a bit of a stretch. We're a team of seven. Yeah, so that's right. More of a life.
And do you know what? That was going to be one of my questions because obviously these contexts, they talk about group size.
Yes.
Now, you can have some teams that don't necessarily fit in the social context size bracket, but look more like a life group, but yet their focus is mission. And I think youth ministry is a perfect example.
Yeah, and I think you would include
which wins out.
Yeah, well, see, I think with youth, I think you'd also include, though, like, you've got, like, your leaders, the signed, sealed, delivered leaders who've gone through the Safe Church process, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, you have.
Shout out to the Safe Church process.
and the leaders who have done it.
You'd also have some of those, like, key kids. Like the next generation of leaders who are starting to come through, who you kind of start leaning on a little bit to say, hey, can you help me with this? You know, where, so you've kind of got a larger group, right? Where you've got opportunities for kids to have a go at some stuff. Maybe not all of them, and maybe not in everything, not every aspect, but you've got that taking place. You've got components then that you're interacting with, say, our evening service, where you want them to come along and be a part of that. Like, there's
on Zombie Apocalypse night, we brought in a few people.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
You know, like that kind of level, or people who are, like, you know, junior leaders of other ministries who are part of it. Like, so, like, there is, I think, a wider context in which, because I think you're right, Matt, it does exist that way, right? You get to practice. You're on mission. There's a sense of community that goes beyond just the team that's running youth. Like, it's the community of the kids as well. But, like, if we got that running, like, if, like, at its best, what could that do for us as a community of faith, right? You think about all of the contexts. If we were a community of faith where everyone was spending time alone with God and it was, like, life-giving, meaningful, that would have a certain impact.
Yeah.
Right? I think there'd be a – but I'm not sure it would be as evident as if we got this one right. You know what I'm saying? Like, so what do you think it would look like if we – because I think if we can capture in our imaginations, that's what it looks like. That'll help us take steps towards it.
I mean, the few instances where I've been involved in something like that, I'm always struck with how – like, how impressive things are when we pull together. Like, the Christmas light display with Bethlehem, like, that took a fair big chunk of people, and you have people with expertise, and then some of us who just turned up with a paintbrush, and then on the actual night there were all the little actors in their costumes, and
bless,
like,
them.
That was pretty impressive. Like, we did really well. The other thing was in youth, remember Revive, Matt? So Revive is this big night where all these different youth groups come across all the Baptists from across the state. and we hosted it. And our team had to be like 70 or 80 people with heaps of volunteers. And at the end of the night, you just got this huge sense of accomplishment that, you know, some of us have just handed out cans of soft drink to kids and some of us have hosted or whatever. But we've all pulled together to make this really impressive night. It's just a really, it's a proud moment.
And I think that's worth keeping, like, I think that's great. Like, keep that in mind. You kind of go, we can achieve so much more together. Because I think that's kind of the part, that's the whole point of it.
And I think that, I think that camaraderie, like, it's something different to friendship, but equally as valuable. Because this has kind of got me thinking about, you know, how we've all got work friends, like, you know, people who you spend a ridiculous amount of time during a week and you're all working on the same tasks and you've got these friendships and, but they kind of, they don't necessarily transcend outside of that space, but they're really significant and you lean on them and they support you and they, you learn from one another. And there's a camaraderie in that, that I think is really powerful and really makes, in my experience, has made really solidified in me a sense of I belong here. This, like, I have value here. I know people here and people know me. And it's not necessarily about I've got friends here, but I'm a part of a community here. And I feel like that's a relationship that is a bit different to a friendship. It's not better or worse. It's different in it, and it brings different value to that space. And I think you're absolutely right, Jess. I remember that Revive night, and I remember After running this ridiculous event, we then had to clean the entire church and set it back up so that it was ready for Sunday services. And I remember it was like 1 a.m. Mm. And we're all there just sitting in the chairs in the auditorium after finishing. And like there was, it was just like, you know, these people, like we've just rallied together and I feel closer to them for it. Mm. And it might have just been because we were mopping up the atrium where all the Coke got spilled. Like
nothing was spilled at the church, Mark.
No. And no carpet was stained.
It was only on the non-porous surface.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sure. And I think that I think you're right. And that's where that sense of community where it's, you know, as I said last week, you know, we can sometimes collapse community and mission together and make community the mission, which gives a very different outcome than if the mission is what forms or shapes community. So I think that there's incredible value in kind of going that's what we're after. Mm. And we get everyone pulling together. Like the example that I used a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week in the podcast. I can no longer remember where I use these things, but you know, like those Pixar shorts.
Yes.
Like it was last week. You know.
Just, it was in your sermon. I was listening.
In a non-speaking 5-minute movie, there's like hundreds of people who are involved and all of them are necessary. Mm. Some of them play very small roles. Some of them play really significant roles, but they're all an important part of it. And they kind of pull off this amazing award-winning, you know, short.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, if that's true for like short films, how much more so than, you know, for the mission of God? So I think there's something really quite significant about painting that picture. Mm. I mean, I reckon another area that's worth exploring is helping one another understand spiritual gifts and abilities, right? Because, you know, you want to have a go in stuff. I remember when I first arrived in Australia and started working in youth ministry, there was a very egalitarian approach to speaking. Like everyone had a night that they spoke, right? That was the way it was. I understand now that that's just because it's Australia and that's the way it goes. But
yeah, that's how we do it.
It's very Australian. And there's a part of me that's like, listen, if you want to have a go, great. Hmm. But if you've had a go and you're like, not for me, you don't need to be on the roster next time. Yeah. Like it's okay. Like you're a valuable part of the team, whether you speak on a Friday night or a Wednesday, like, or not. It's like you bring value.
Value
at his family. We don't have to all be equal in the things that we do.
Yeah.
And I found that a really intriguing kind of way to approach things because it kind of ignored giftedness, it kind of ignored skills and abilities and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think there's something about, you know, there's the experimentation of kind of going, I've never spoken in front of a group before.
Yeah.
I think I can. I'd like to have a crack at it. Great. Go for it. But then there's people that kind of go, you know what? It's just not my thing. Yeah. It's just not my thing.
Computer says no.
Yeah. Like I'm great one-on-one with people. I'm fantastic behind the scenes. I notice when people aren't there. Like, oh man, that's so brilliant. We need all of that.
There's
no need for you to step into spaces that are like just it's not a fit at all. And I think there's something really powerful about recognizing gifts and abilities. And like I've got some particular views about spiritual gift assessments. I don't think they're worth the paper they're written on, to tell you the truth. Because
I'll just go through my filing cabinet and throw them all out.
I should probably explain why. I think that ultimately when we do spiritual gifts surveys, we end up kind of with the wrong, we ask the wrong question, which is what are my spiritual gifts? Whereas the biblical model seems to be that the gifts are given to the church, like they are the gifts to the church, not to us as individuals per se.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, that's actually like it's built into the gifts, right? Mm. So if I have the gift of teaching, I'm not the one who receives the gift. It's the people who like are taught. Or learn something. If I have the gift of encouragement, it's not me. It's not, I've got the gift of encouragement. I feel wonderful.
I'm so encouraged.
It's the people who I encourage who receive the gift. And, you know, if we believe that it's the Holy Spirit who is enabling us to be a gift to the church, then really the question is not what's my gift. It's more a matter of what does the Holy Spirit want to do through me to build up the church? Right. And if we're supposed to be kind of conformed to the likeness of Jesus, I mean, how many gifts did Jesus have? Like, I'm pretty sure he probably had all of them.
I would say so, yes.
You know,
a fair few.
And I don't, but you don't see Jesus kind of going, oh, this is my gift and that's not my gift. And he's just open to the Spirit.
Yeah.
And so whatever God invites him to do, he steps into it in obedience and is enabled, which seems to be the model in Scripture, right? Mm. So, if I say, oh, I don't have the gift of evangelism, like if somebody comes to me and says, I really want to become a Christian, I want to become a follower of Jesus, I can't say to them, listen, I don't have that gift. I'm really sorry.
Go talk to someone else.
That's a hard pass.
I wish we could say that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But the reality is we say, well, quick prayer, Holy Spirit, and then you do the best you can. And if it's the work of the Spirit, then I mean, something's going to happen. Mm. And so I think that when we ask the questions of what are my gifts, I think we can sometimes miss the important part, like that we're conduits more than we are receptacles of, right? It's not like I receive the gift and then I decide whether I'm going to use it or not. It's the Holy Spirit through us. Mm. And so I think that just encouraging people to step into stuff, like where's the Spirit inviting you? Go for it.
Mm.
Now, I think there's an interesting interaction then with like abilities and experience and all that. That's the other thing I don't like about those surveys. They tend to just reinforce your own experiences. Mm. So if you've done certain things, then those end up being your gifts, which seems to be a backwards way of identifying them. So I think that there's value just in encouraging people to have a go. Mm. But there is something, of course, about ability. And about, what we might say, not spiritually speaking, but kind of areas of giftedness and capacity and whatnot. The example of people who might be good in front of a crowd and able to speak and not be too stressed out by that. And those who are, better kind of one-on-one or, whatever the case might be. But how, like, to that end then, if finding our gifts, the things that we should be practicing, right? Because I do think that there are certain areas where the Spirit tends to use us, if that makes sense. Like there's some tendencies in terms of where the Spirit uses us. And if that's a valuable part of our practice in mission, like how have you guys, and this is a long introduction to the question, but how have you guys identified those trends in how the Spirit has used you to be a gift to the church?
Jess?
I just go where people ask me to go, really.
Matt's eyes just got really wide as he turned to Jess there.
Because Jess will have the answers. I just get put where people ask me, or if someone's like, I think you'd be good at this, go to do this. I'm like, yeah, okay. That's all. Yeah, I haven't overthought it too much.
No, I'd agree though. Like, I think.
Look, can I just interrupt though? Mm-hmm. So. I think that's a great way forward. Like, I think that's the best way to discern gifts. Mm. But are there things there, like, that now that you've said yes to a whole bunch of stuff, things that you kind of go, yeah, this tends to be where the Spirit gets the biggest bang for the buck?
I mean, yeah, I've been on the podcast for 2 years now. I assume people think that I'm comfortable in a space to talk and be a little bit more up the front in the spotlight. Zero qualifications to be that. But that's definitely where I find myself a lot of the time. I don't know whether I'm the one pushing that or other people are, but that's kind of where I am. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's been a trend in, I guess, people speaking into my life and then paralleled with then opportunities being opened. Mm-hmm. So
classic Spirit move.
Isn't he just classic? But I remember the first time someone kind of said, Matt, like, I think you should kind of lean into your preaching and your speaking. Mm-hmm. It was my baptism. Like, it was after I'd given my testimony. Mm-hmm. It was Jane Faze, bless her.
Mm-hmm. She
just gave me a hug. She was lovely. And then I did my internship and there was an opportunity to, spend some time with you, Mark, mm-hmm. and kind of explore preaching. Mm-hmm. And then I went on a church plant. All of a sudden I was preaching relatively regular. Mm. And then, and then all of a sudden I find myself working in a church and it's kind of in the role description. Yeah. And I find that that things kind of get affirmed by both people and opportunities. Mm. And I think it's also something about a self-reflection, a willingness to kind of reflect and kind of go, well, actually, if it is around preaching, like, it's something that I'm still diligently trying to develop and grow in. But, you know, there's also...
You're very good at it.
Yeah. We've literally got a preaching lecturer in the room. Like, let's just all calm down. We've got someone who's got 20 years of experience and someone's got
a few...
You know
what? I think I'm the best, actually.
But there is something to be said about, like, well, then what's that process like for me? Mm. Like, is it something that's anxiety-inducing? And sure, there are times. There are times.
Can confirm I found you on the floor of your office. Right.
But there's also something where each time I kind of lean into it, I feel my abilities progressing you know, maybe I've got a boss who kind of pushes me to challenge myself in that area and, you know, maybe I've taken his advice from
You're
time
welcome.
To time and I've seen that develop. And so I think there's also something about being self-aware in that space and kind of going, okay, so I lent into that. What was that like for me? And what did it feel like? And I know that's very nuanced and that's very like subjective. Yeah. But there's an opportunity there to kind of go, well, actually, that felt right. Mm. That felt like I was being used by God. And so I'm going to give that a crack again and kind of lean into that and see if that gets affirmed again.
Yep.
Now, when it's come to my preaching, it has been. And that's been really encouraging. Yep. It's also been challenging because it means, okay, well, I need to get better at it and try harder at it and keep working at it. But yeah, so I think it's a culmination of all those three things, affirmation, opportunity, and then self-reflection.
Mm. No, I think those are really good reflections.
Thank you.
I think the order is really important too.
Mm.
Like I think, Jess, you know, your immediate answer of when an opportunity comes, I just say yes. I think it's actually the right attitude for us to kind of go, all right, well, God might be in this.
Mm.
And it's
and sometimes it's not, because sometimes it's me on a Sunday in the worship team. Oh. Yeah. Where I was asked to do that actually. And I did not feel right. It was not where the spirit was.
It was not affirmed. There were no other opportunities.
I'm still waiting to hear from Steph Sarah.
But I think that, you know, that's a really good starting point for us if we're going to be responsive to the opportunities that the spirit gives us to participate with what he's doing in the church, right? I think that's really important. And then I think, you know, the affirmation of those around us and, you know, our own sense of, that felt okay. Or, you know, that was anxiety inducing, but it was an important thing. Because sometimes doing things that are a little bit scary or hard, it's not bad.
No.
It's just kind of scary and hard, but that's different, you know? So I think that's a really important kind of way forward. And I think that, you know, that kind of culture is critical to a social context, you know, where there is opportunity given and whatnot. And, you know, it's just when you said it, I remember the first time you preached in the evening congregation.
Yes, so do
you. You paced back and forth. Yes. And I think I said to you, like a caged lion.
Like you did. You did say that.
It was just, you were walking back and it was just kind of like, I was watching a tennis match. It was just kind of like, wow, he's got a lot of nervous
energy. I think I actually worked up a sweat, not because I was nervous, but because our platform is quite big.
Wait, and you went the whole length of the platform.
Like I was like, I want to see the people to the left and I want to see the people to the right.
Did you have a Madonna mic on?
I did have a Madonna mic.
It was just like, holy, you got to just nail that boy's shoes to the floor. So
that's a rough first greeting.
No, like, it was helpful. It was helpful.
Yeah. It was good.
I mean, now you're planted very firmly, right. So very good.
I keep a 1 meter radius to
that.
It was good content, but it was like, okay, wow. It's just, the boy is moving. So
I think it was Acts. I think I preached in Acts.
I don't remember that. No. I don't remember that.
It was the weekend that I got engaged.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
All right.
That's why I remember all the details.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah, okay. Returning to the topic at hand.
Back to what we're really here to
do. How's that for a transition? Yeah, I think that, you know, a third, you know, because this is the big three, but I think a third question to engage with in terms of how we start then kind of becomes, who can we encourage to have a go?
Mm.
Like, who is it that we should be saying? Who should we be inviting to join us up front? Who should we be inviting to, you know, to have a crack at doing the talk? Who should we invite and say, hey, I think that there's an opportunity for you here. Who is that person and how do we go about doing that? Like,
yeah.
You know, 'cause you do need some of that support and, you know, and affirmation and coaching and feedback and
yep.
more opportunities and all of those sorts of things. But like, how do you go about identifying the people that you can say, even if it's not in the social context, right? Mm. Like, but where you can say, hey, have a go. Like, I don't know if you've got someone in kind of youth ministry, we won't use names, but you know, someone in the youth team where you're like, or one of those junior leaders, you kind of go, oh, maybe I could be giving them an opportunity, or whether it's, you know, someone amongst your life group leaders, like, how do we go about doing that in ways that we start to develop a culture of, I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to say yes in part because I know this is kind of a safe space, because I think that's pretty important. If I think that I'm just going to get up there and get hammered or torn apart or not supported, not so keen.
Yeah.
You know, but if we're going to do that, how and who? I think those become fairly important questions.
And I think normalizing that culture is an important step. And I guess we all then play a responsibility in that, particularly if we're in a position of leadership, because you know, it is daunting and we can't expect people to kind of self-identify and kind of go, hey, I think I'm being called into this, or I think I want to have a crack at this and see how it's going. So there does, like when you were talking about feedback, you know, I've been really fortunate that I've had really helpful feedback, he says to the man who gives it to him regularly. No, but in all seriousness, and it has normalized it. And, you know, I know that when I preach or when it, even, you know, just in regards to my work here, at, you know, Mark and I have plenty of conversations and it's now become a normal part of the way that we communicate. It's really helpful. But I think, you know, that takes time and, you know, that's developed as, you know, we've continued to work together. And so we need a kind of foster that same culture at the grassroots. Like, you know, even when you're joining the, you know, I don't know, even the coffee ministry team and the welcoming team that, you know, hey, like let's talk about this. Let's hang it back after the service and muck around with our, you know, latte art because we want to get better at it. Like, why not? And and just kind of normalize that conversation of, hey, we're actually all works in progress and we're all seeking to kind of grow in our gifts and abilities. And let's talk about it. Like,
that being said though, you guys already had that relationship established of like, he's obviously a fair bit ahead of you than in the preaching world.
Yeah, a couple of steps.
And he's also your boss. I don't want to hear from someone at the coffee cart that I was walking back and forth like a lion in a cage. I'm a bit too fragile to receive negative feedback.
It's true. There is, no, and you're absolutely right. There's something to
only
be said
encouragement,
about.
Encouragement.
There's, well, there's something to be said about who's going to be your voice of input.
Yeah.
And kind of identifying that person.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, feedback is complicated because we tend to think about feedback as negative. And the reality is that it's often perceived as negative because we get feedback to grow, which means that we need to know where we need to grow. So like positive feedback about what you did well, it's kind of like, oh, thanks.
Yeah, no, please keep that coming.
Yeah, but you know, that's like essential.
It's necessary.
But there's something missing.
But it doesn't actually help us develop necessarily. Like it can do. Like I think that there's, I can't remember who it was. And if I did, I wouldn't use their name anyways. But it was a young developing preacher that I was listening to some of their sermons on. I remember saying to them, like, you tell really good stories, right? And so why don't you try to figure out how to do that more so? Like, why don't you use a structure that's more narrative? Because I think you do that really well. Some of the other stuff, like, I'm not sure you do it as well. Why don't you lean into the strength? So there are ways to use the strengths-based kind of approach to things. But it is harder. And I think we need to kind of, I think, be clear at the outset, you know, so that I don't ask you just to come in and do something. And then I say, oh, here's the feedback. Like, you kind of need to say up front, you know, why don't you kind of have a go at doing the talk on Friday night and then I'll give you feedback on these two areas, right? I'm not going to give you feedback on everything, just these two things, whatever the case might be. I think that there's value in kind of being upfront about that too, because that helps set that culture. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's an important area that plays a huge part in church community, but then also in our individual discipleship. And I think you're right. It's probably an area that we haven't focused in on or given as much attention to as others. You know, next week we're going to be talking about the public context, mm-hmm. church. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, I mean, that's been the way we've been doing things for 2,000 years. Mm. It's kind of an established routine, and it gets a lot of our resources. Yeah. It gets a lot of our time and our attention. I liked your question around the whole, if we focused in on this more, what would we see? Mm. And as we talked about that, I'm like, I want to see that. I want to see that in our church community.
Yeah.
And not just here at GBC. I'd love to see that in all church communities, because I actually think that there's huge opportunity, not only in our own individual discipleships, but something that Rox said that still resonates with me, another of her bumper stickers, was that many people want to see the gospel before they hear about the gospel. Mm. And I think the social context provides that opportunity. And that's a huge kind of space for us to just be helping people see who Jesus is by the way that we serve and do mission.
Mm. And I think there's space for people who are on the journey of faith but haven't come to a point of faith to participate
definitely.
In the mission.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways for them to be involved that allows them to do so with integrity, right? So they're not pretending to be something they're not.
Yeah.
You know, but they're able to engage because they're exploring faith and they're exploring what it means to follow Jesus, and they're able to participate in ways that are appropriate. I think one of the problems, I think, you know, again, speaking for us, and this is one of the reasons why we've gone through this series, is that I think we've often been very Sunday-centric.
Yeah.
Right. And so while we have had some of these other contexts, we haven't really invested in them.
Yeah.
And the value of investing in them is that you end up with more opportunities for people. Because Sunday, while it's quite resource heavy in the sense of number of volunteers and kids ministry and worship and tech and coffee and on it goes, generally speaking, there are very few opportunities.
Yeah.
Right. So I think about the preaching. You can kind of have one preacher a Sunday. So there's not actually heaps of opportunities. And if someone says, hey, I'd like to explore that, where do you start?
Yeah.
Do you start with, okay, well, here you go. Sunday morning, you're up.
150 people in the auditorium. Yeah. Good luck.
That's easy. That's fine.
And do it twice. You know, like, so you kind of go, well, that's not helpful for people. Mm. But where do we multiply those opportunities?
Yeah.
And so the social context and, you know, life groups and in terms of the personal context, they can be really helpful places to create variation and pathways to involvement, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have to join the worship team and do Sunday night. You could actually join the kids team where, you know.
They would have loved the
Jess. They would have loved it. And
that's where I'm supposed to be. The kids appreciate my skills. Adults, not so much.
You know, but there's opportunity to grow and develop and you know, all those sorts of things. And I think that if we're too Sunday focused, that there's just not enough opportunity for people. So the opportunity is from 0 to 100, it feels like. It's I'm sitting in the pews or I'm on the platform. It's like, holy, that's a big jump. Where do you find those opportunities in between? And even, you know, youth, you know, speaking twice a term, like, oh man, that, you know, from 0 to 2x a term even is, that's a lot. But what if I could do a Winterfest and I did one of the talks on day 3.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one talk during the year, but okay, well that's an entry point. Mm. So I think that we often lack some of those entry points to develop people. You know, I think similarly about leadership development. You know, we don't have a lot of those kind of lower leadership levels where people are leading like small things to kind of learn and develop and grow to lead larger things and larger groups. And I think that has implications on, you know, leadership pipelines and you know, all of those sorts of things. So I think there's some enormous potential in this, in this context in particular. So I agree with you, Matt. I think that thinking about what it could be, you kind of go, oh, that's really appealing, appealing.
And then it's on us to keep our eyes open for other people's giftings or where we think we can encourage them. Because that's, where it starts. It's so important to get a word from someone of like, I've been watching you and I think this is where you should give it a go. And you're like, okay.
do you guys remember the first time someone said that to you? Like you remember like the
good
first opportunity.
Days.
Yeah, for the preaching. But even like just in ministry, like the first time someone said, I've been watching and I think you could, ...
I think I just stepped up into a place when I first started like kids ministry was there was no one else to do it. So I just invited myself into that space. But definitely at youth, like when we're doing term planning and before it was Matt, now it's Kat saying like, you should be on more talks because that's kind of where your gifting is. I'm like, okay, cool. And that's like, it's an encouraging word of that. Mm. They've heard me speak and they want me to do it again. So I must be okay.
Yeah, I guess so. I remember talking to Steve Dixon about me wanting the internship. I knew that GBC had this youth internship and I spoke to him about it, and I remember him being like, this is really exciting and I can really see you in that space. And then I got the role. So there have been a few people throughout who have kind of been like, you're in the right spot.
Mm. Calling something out. And
Yeah. So, but for the life of me, I just can't remember who they are or when it was or any of the details. Mm. But I haven't had any coffee today, so maybe that's why.
Because I think, you know, we can be those formative voices for people.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we can see things in others that they can't see themselves. Mm. You know, I think I would reflect on my journey in ministry is often other people seeing potential in me before I saw it in myself.
Yeah.
You know, people saying, hey, I think you could do more, or I think you could do this. And you're like, really?
Mm.
And you kind of have the go and you're like, oh yeah, they were right. That's bizarre. How did you see that? You know? And so I think we can sometimes help people kind of see in their blind spots a little bit. You know, I think there's something really powerful about that as a culture piece as well, about watching people and kind of going, hey, let me call something out in you. Like, let me kind of point you in a direction.
Yeah, it's super powerful.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's enough to get started on the how.
I think, yeah.
Even in lockdown?
Even in lockdown. Well, thanks so much, guys. It's been good chatting. We've got one more week left of this series and then the big three will be talking about new things and different things. And
yeah, it sounded like you were going to say we're done, but we'll still be here.
We're still here.
We're still here on a Wednesday.
We will find you.
Chatting about life.
Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure you're there at one of our online services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.